We are in the book of Deuteronomy now, the final book of the five books of Moses. It is called Deuteronomy in the Greek text, I believe. It means second law. In the Hebrew, it gets the traditional title of the first couple of words of the book, which in this case is, these are the words. The book is actually the transcript, for the most part, of Moses' final address to the Israelites before he goes up on Mount Pisgah and dies. He has been told by God that this is coming because of a lapse of judgment on his part several months earlier. He's not going to be allowed to go into the Promised Land, but he will get a good look at it from the Pisgah side of the Jordan, and then God will just switch him off. He'll still be very healthy and strong and have great eyesight. God will just turn him off at 120 years of age. But before he goes, he does what a lot of people do when they know they're not going to see their students anymore, not going to see their family members anymore. They try to jam in as much advice and encouragement and teaching and warnings as they can possibly do. And so this book is a wealth of information about the Mosaic Law, as we refer to it. In fact, it was, I believe, now don't hold me to this because it's tradition, I think. I believe it was required memorization for a lot of ancient Israeli young men, and almost certainly for ancient Israeli young priests and Levites, because this is a great summary of a lot of the things we've already gone over. So without any further ado, let's delve into Moses' final address. Deuteronomy chapter 1:1. These are the words that Moses spoke to all Israel beyond the Jordan in the wilderness. Now we know exactly where he's at. He's in the plains of Moab, on the northeast corner of the Dead Sea. It's 8-10 miles from the encampment across the Jordan to Jericho. So where they're at right now with the towering presence of God above the tabernacle, you know, glowing by day, burning by night, the people over in Jericho can see this place very, very clearly. And so that's where Moses is at. They've been there for months, the majority of this 40th year of the Exodus. And so this is where he's going to make his final address. Now, the next part is a little bit, hard, I think, to translate in both Hebrew and in Greek. But I'm going to give you my sense for it, is that the next few couple of lines is a description of where the Israelis have been in this 40th year. In the Arabah, now the Arabah is a technical term for the dry desert region that stretches from the north shore of the Gulf of Aqaba northward along both sides of the Dead Sea, and then partway up the Jordan Valley. That's the Arabah. So in the wilderness and the Arabah are very similar phrases, and I think that might be where some of the confusion starts in the translation. So in the Arabah opposite Suf, Suf is a shortened form of Red Sea. So Gulf of Aqaba is an arm of the Red Sea. Between Paran and Tophel Laban, Hazeroth, and Dizahab. Now, those are places associated with the journeys of Israel once they left Mount Sinai and made their first attempt to go into the Promised Land, but failed and then had to go back south to the Red Sea area and then around Moab Edom and Moab until they could come in to the plains of Moab for their next go-round to come into the Promised Land. So then we have this note that says it is 11 days' journey from Horeb. That's the name of Mount Sinai. It's one of the synonyms. By way of Mount Seir. Mount Seir is Edom. To Kadesh Barnea. That's the south entry point that they went to but screwed up in the second year of the Exodus. So I think what it's trying to express here is that in the 40th year, they were originally at Kadesh Barnea near Mount Seir. But then they had to go south and east, kind of almost back to where Mount Sinai was located, and then north, and then up around the northern side of the Dead Sea, and that's about 11 days travel if you do it just straight. I think that's what it's trying to express here. Regardless, verse 3 is very clear about when this address takes place. We already know from verse 1 it takes place in the plains of Moab. Verse 3, in the 40th year, on the first day of the 11th month. So now we're back to a very precise date. The 40th year of the Exodus, the 11th month of that 40th year. So there's 2 months left of the 40th year. Now, I have a calendar that I've tried to reclaim using lots of assistance from astronomy programs, that the first day of the 11th month in the 40th year of the Exodus would have been, the daylight hours would have been Tuesday, the 10th of January of 1416 BC. So that gives you something to kind of grab a hold of and think about. It's the beginning of winter for these guys. The beginning of spring is only 3 months away, and they will enter the Promised Land in the spring. So we've got a three-month window between this address and them going into the Promised Land. Okay. Moses spoke to the people of Israel according to all that he who is had given him in commandment to them. So it's going to be a reprisal. Not a reprisal. It's going to be a an encore of all of the laws that he received at Mount Sinai 39 years ago. 39 plus, almost 40 years ago, all the way up until the present day. So, a lot of material. After he had defeated Sihon, the king of the Amorites, who lived in the Heshbon, and Og, the king of Bashan, who lived in Ashtaroth and in Edrei. So, that was the recent battles in the 40th year. That gave them the annexed territory on the east side of the Jordan. Verse 5, beyond the Jordan in the land of Moab. So the plains of Moab, beyond Jordan here, Moses has decided to start using a reference point of the Promised Land. So in this case, beyond the Jordan is the east side of the Jordan. Moses undertook to explain this law, saying, and now we begin the direct quote. We'll discover later that Moses writes down all these things once he's done. So I don't know if he's having somebody transcribe it as he talks, or whether or not God has done what God has done to other prophetic persons like the apostles and given him supernatural memory. So he writes it down verbatim for what he says to them. He who is our God said to us at Horeb, so Mount Sinai, you've stayed long enough at this mountain. Turn and take your journey and go to the hill country of the Amorites and to all their neighbors in the Arabah, in the hill country and in the lowland and the Negeb and by the seacoast and the land of the Canaanites and Lebanon as far as the great river, the river Euphrates. So we know that that command came through Moses at Mount Sinai in the second year of the Exodus. After they've got the tabernacle built and dedicated, God tells him, okay, you're ready now to move. Go up to the southern border and get ready to move into the promised land. Now, it's interesting that in this reference from God, it is understood that eventually the promised land is supposed to include that Beka Valley that goes from Lebo Hamat, the entrance point of that valley, which is very near Dan as the northernmost city of the land of Israel. That Beka Valley goes all the way north, pretty much, to the bend in the Euphrates River. And in the time of David, and then much more solidified in the time of Solomon's kingdom, that whole valley was under the control of the Israelis. It was annexed territory. And so that seems to be already predicted right here in the words of God. So verse number 8, see, I have set the land before you. Go in and take possession of the land that he who is swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give to them and to their offspring after them. So a reference to this being the fulfillment of prophecy. At that time, meaning at the time that we were getting ready to leave Mount Sinai, or in close proximity to that departure, I said to you, I'm not able to bear you by myself. He who is your God has multiplied you, and behold, you are today as numerous as the stars of heaven. May he who is the God of your fathers make you 1,000 times as many as you are and bless you as he's promised you. But how can I bear by myself the weight and burden of you and your strife? So this is a reference now to that near total collapse, emotional collapse that Moses had within days after them leaving Mount Sinai. And we talked about that at length, that he had actually been warned about a year earlier by his father-in-law that he needed to not be the lone wolf judge of the entire nation. He needed to have multi-level judges to help him in this. But apparently Moses chose not to listen to his father's advice, and so he got in a mess once they left Mount Sinai and people started grumping and griping and it got bad. So he was told by God, verse 13, choose for your tribes wise, understanding, and experienced men, and I will appoint them as your heads. So Moses was told by God, put the plan in place that Reuel gave you. And so he told the people of Israel, this is what we're going to do. Verse 14, and you answered me, the thing that you have spoken is good for us to do. So I took the heads of your tribes, wise and experienced men, and set them as heads over you. commanders of thousands, commanders of hundreds, commanders of fifties, commanders of tens, and officers throughout your tribes. So we have this multi-level supervisory judicial system that's put in place. Its lowest component is one judge serving 10 families. If he can't sort it out, he's to bump it up to the judge that serves 50 families. If that guy can't handle it, he bumps it up to the judge that serves 100 families. And if he can't handle it, it gets bumped up to the judge that serves 1,000 families. And if that can't fix it, it goes to one of the 70 leaders in the Sanhedrin. And if that can't fix it, then it goes to Moses. And if that doesn't fix it, the high priest is used to approach God, or Moses himself is going to go and talk to God about it. So that is what he is bearing testimony to, is that we put that system in place shortly after we left Mount Sinai, and you said you were good with that. Verse number 16 again, I charged your judges at that time, hear the cases between your brothers, judge righteously between a man and his brother, or the alien who is with you. One of the things that we need to emphasize is that Israeli law applied equally, and rights were also granted equally to non-Israelis in Israel. It was supposed to be the same across the board. So, verse 17, you are to not be partial in judgment. So, you're supposed to be fair, always. You shall hear the small and the great alike. So, it doesn't matter whether they have a lot of influence or little influence. Doesn't matter if they're rich or they're poor. Everybody needs their day before a judge. You shall not be intimidated by anyone, for the judgment is God's. So, the instruction given to these judges at all their different levels is, don't let anyone push you around, because you represent God through His Word. And the case that is too hard for you, you shall bring to me and I will hear it. So just like I said earlier, it gets bumped up through all the different levels until it finally reaches the top. Verse 18, and I commanded you at that time all the things that you should do. So that's a summary of how the justice system was put in place very carefully shortly after leaving Mount Sinai. Verse 19, then we set out from Horeb and we went through all the great and terrifying wilderness that you saw on the way to the hill country of the Amorites as He who is our God commanded us. We came to Kadesh Barnea. So that's the southern entry point to the Promised Land proper. And I said to you, you've come to the hill country of the Amorites, which He who is our God is giving us. See, who He is our God is has set the land before you. Go up, take possession of as He who is your God of your fathers has told you. Do not fear or be dismayed. So apparently, now this is new information right here. When they first got to Kadesh Barnea, Moses said, all right, guys, this is where we're going in. Let's get ready. And then they responded in verse 22. Then all of you came near me and said, let us send men before us that they may explore the land for us and bring us word again of the way by which we must go up and the cities into which we shall come. So they were the ones that came up with the idea of doing a spying out of the land, a touring of the land first. Verse 23, this thing seemed good to me. And actually, when we were going through the event as it was described in the previous passage, Moses took it to God, and God said, yeah, do this. So I took 12 men from you, one man from each tribe. And they turned and they went up into the hill country, and they came into the valley of Eshcol. They spied it out. They took into their hands some of the fruit of the land and brought it down to us and brought us word again and said, it is a good land that he who is our God is giving to us. So all very accurate account, leaves out some of the things like it was 40 days and things like that. Verse 26, yet you would not go up, but rebelled against the command of he who is your God. Now, when he's talking about this, he's using a very broad use of the pronoun you. Because it was actually that first generation of leadership that refused to go. Everybody he's talking to was under the age of 20 or not even born when this event happened. So he is thinking more generically, you Israelis as a whole rebelled at that point to the idea of trusting God. You murmured in your tents and you said, because he who is hated us, he's brought us up out of the land of Egypt to give us into the hand of the Amorites to destroy us. Oh, where are we going up? Our brothers have made our hearts melt, saying the people are greater and taller than we. The cities are great and fortified up to the heavens. And besides, we have seen the sons of the Anakim there, which the Anakim are the giants of the land. Apparently the hybrids of the most recent meddling by the fallen angels into the Middle East of this time. This is all representative of what the 12 spies presented when they came back. Only two of them gave a good report. The other 10 gave a really scary, bad report. That's what Moses is remembering as the crisis point. Verse 29, then I said to you, do not be in dread or afraid of them. He who is your God, who goes before you, will himself fight for you, just as he did for you in Egypt before your eyes. And in the wilderness, where you have seen how he who is your God carried you as a man carries his sons all the way that you went until you came to this place. Now, I'm going to remind you again, as Moses talks to these guys, the only ones that will have a conscious memory of this are probably the people that are now 58 down into their mid-40s, meaning the people that were, you know, in their teens and maybe down into their, you know, the end of their first decade. That's when clear memories really get formed in our brains. And so these guys remember what he's talking about because they were kids watching all this happen. And so Moses is trying to teach them to learn from the past. Don't re-engage in this sort of stuff again. Verse 32, yet in spite of this word, you did not believe he who is your God, and who went before you in the way to seek you out a place to pitch your tents in fire by night and in cloud by day to show you by that way you should go. And so he who is heard your words and was angered, and he swore, not one of these men of this evil generation will see the good land that I swore to give to your fathers except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh. He shall see it. And to him and to his children, I will give the land on which he's trodden, because he has wholly followed he who is. Now think about the fact that Caleb's standing right there while Moses is giving this final address. And he's been cooling his heels during the last 38 and a half years. He's actually seen the place that he is going to inherit. And he's chomping at the bit to get back in there. And so he is a hero of this story, and Moses makes sure that's clear. The other guy is Joshua, who's definitely standing here as well. He went on that trip. He upheld the faith in the Lord, but he'll be leading the Israelis when they go into the Promised Land this time. Verse number 37. Now, this is where it gets personal. Even with me, he who is was angry on your account and said, you shall not go in there. Now, that only happened at the beginning of the 40th year. So that's fresh in Moses' mind. Up until that moment, he was going to be part of the entry into the Promised Land. He would have been given a family farm in the Promised Land. Well, actually, because he's a Levite, he would have been given a family home in one of the Levitical cities in the Promised Land. But that whole Waters of Meribah thing screwed that up when he did not show proper deference to God and struck the rock and said, how many times do we have to do things for you rebels? And God called him on the carpet about it. And so here's Moses feeling a little bit bitter. You got to acknowledge that. That he doesn't get to go in because of that incident. Even with me, he who is was angry on your account and said, you shall not go in there. Joshua, the son of Nun, who stands before you, he shall cause Israel. He shall enter. Encourage him, for he shall cause Israel to inherit it. So be kind to the next guy. Don't give him a hard time. And, you know, that's good. That's good advice in every circumstance. Don't make things hard for your leaders, and especially don't make it hard on the new guy who's in leadership. Now, verse 39, as for your little ones, who you said would become a prey, and your children who today have no knowledge of good or evil, they shall go in there, and to them I will give it, and they shall possess it. But as for you, turn and journey in the wilderness in the direction of the Red Sea. So that's where we're going to have to stop in our summary of Moses' second teaching of the law and his personal remembrance of how all this stuff played out. He's talking to a lot of those kids that heard God say these things about their own dads and moms. So mark your place. We'll get back into the Word next time we have opportunity.